Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tanamani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaudavani Pacharane Namaste Sasuni Vati Pascati Devatarani Om Aganatami Nandasya Zina Zina Salakaya Saksu Samilitan Zaina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah Sitse Tanya Manubhistam Stapitam Vena Bhutale Sayam Vipakadamayam Vedati sa pradati kam. Vansa kalpa tu vishcha, kripa sundu vaya vasa, patitinam bhagane vabai sa shubhya namo. So it's what? Can you, if, here's something I've learned. That if you say, can everyone hear me? No one knows if everyone can hear you. So it's a problematic question. But if you say, is there anyone who can't hear me? Raise your hand. Then no one answers anyway because they can't hear what you're saying. So the idea is to make it louder. is the volume, if you think the volume needs to be increased, please stand up and jump up and down or something like that. Okay. Did you ever notice that when you ask, can everyone hear me? Well, no one knows if everyone can hear you, right? It's just one of those things. Prasvihari, did you know that one?
Yeah, I
learned it. Oh. All right. Is this more helpful, the loudness? Never mind. Aravind, if it's not loud enough, put it louder, okay? That's the easiest way to do it. Now, I wanted to speak something about the end of the Govardhan Leela, and then we'll move to tomorrow's topic. In the Govardhan Leela, we ended with all the Vrijbasis taking shelter of Krishna. They were taking shelter of Krishna in the great storm and the rain in their distress. And Krishna's mood was, these my devotees, they're taking shelter of me. I must give them protection. It is my vow. So Krishna then lifted Govardhan Hill, and he gave shelter to not only the residents of Vrindavan, but he also gave shelter to their cows and their wagons and the priests in the community, everyone. And as I mentioned, that one of our acharyas comments that Krishna's mood was, not only can all of Vrindavan, all of Braja fit under this hill, but the three worlds, everyone in the three worlds can fit under this hill, because Krishna has the capacity to give shelter to everyone. So what does it mean that one has taken shelter of Krishna? What does it mean to you? What does it mean to everyone? That's one of those questions that no one knows the answer to. What does it mean to you? I'm going to point to someone randomly. Is there a rent? Okay, you got pointed to by Ritesh. Yes.
I would say,
what's your name, Prabhu?
Dhananjay without the E.
I just got confused. Without the E? What E?
Without the DH. Okay. With Ananjay.
Oh, Ananjay. You mean like Dhananjay without the DH? Yeah, I get it. Yeah. Okay, what does it mean to you to take shelter of Krishna?
Take shelter.
What happened to the DH? Yeah, what does it mean to you to take shelter of Krishna?
I mean, for one thing, it's like humble surrender. And then another, like, I guess a personal thing means that I have commonality with others in a way.
Commonality with others? In what sense?
So like when I think of like everyone,
yeah, oh, that's really nice.
Of, like, everyone can meet all the great conversations you can have.
And What I was thinking, and yes, everything you just said was wonderful. There's some characteristics of surrender. But in a practical sense, when one is surrendered to another, one is doing what one is doing, but one is thinking of that other person. That's the point of view I was looking at it from. One thinks of that person as one's master, one's beloved, but one's consciousness is focused on pleasing that person. So Krishna said that because the residents of Vrindavan are surrendered to me, they look to me only, I am their shelter, it is my promise, my duty to always protect them. Now, Krishna lifted the hill and the residents of Vrindavan, their consciousness was enwrapped on thinking of Krishna during the entire time the hill was on the little finger of Krishna's left hand. And Krishna, too, was thinking of the residents of Vrindavan. The focus of their attention really focused his attention. And our acharyas also say that it gave Krishna strength. Now, how could that give Krishna strength when Krishna already has unlimited strength? And how do you add more strength to unlimited strength? But yet, Krishna was enlivened and inspired by their great affection for him. It's reciprocal. And then after 8 days, the great Indra understood that Krishna was far more powerful than he could have imagined, and his pride was crushed, and he put down the hill. But of course, the residents of Vrindavan left the hill before he put it down. Otherwise, well, you know what would have happened. And I think Kavi Kanapur explains that Krishna was holding the hill, and then he asked everyone to leave, and the cows all left. But then when they saw that Krishna was still there, because he had to wait till they all left to put down the hill, because why? Well, you can figure it out. Why did they all have to leave before he put down the hill? Yeah, otherwise, yeah. Yeah. Thank you. So, but when the cow, it's a puzzle though, because they didn't want to leave, well, Krishna. But so he told them to do that, so they ran out from under the hill, and then they saw Krishna was still there, so they ran back. Now you have to leave. So they left him. So in any case, Krishna put down the hill. And there's actually only one verse or so in the Bhagavatam that describes what happened under the hill. But our acharyas, in many of their writings, they have described the wonderful exchanges that happened between Krishna and the residents of Vrindavan under the hill. But then they went about their activities again, and everyone glorified Krishna. And then in the next chapter, which is entitled Wonderful Krishna, the residents of Vrindavan, the gopas, they went to Nanda Maharaj because they were thinking, but while Krishna was holding up the hill, their consciousness was just focused on him in great love and great affection. But after they began to think, this is extraordinary. This little boy, we love him very much, but he's just held up a hill, a mountain, for so many days. So they approached Nanda Maharaj and asked him, previously we thought your boy was just, you know, extremely wonderful, but now we think he may be a supreme lord or something. And Nanda Maharaj, and then they began to remember, and they recounted all the different pastimes. Krishna killed Putana, Krishna killed, who else? Tinavarta, then Shakatasura before that, and then on and on. And they suggested to Nanda Maharaj, that this boy is, I think he's the Supreme Lord. He's so beautiful, he's so attractive, and what he does is so extraordinary. And Nanda Maharaj, of course, felt very happy, but he said, I don't know what he is, but I can tell you what Gaugacharya had said about him. So he recounted all the verses, almost exactly what's described in the 8th chapter of the 10th canto of Gauga Muni's predictions at the time of Krishna's birth, including Anena Sarva Durgani Yanya Nasya Tereshita, that if you take shelter of this boy, that he'll always protect you. And it's also interesting that I find it interesting that Gauga Muni said, don't tell anyone about this, about the birth ceremony or anything like that. But yet all the residents of Vrindavan knew about it because it's a village. And that's what happens in the village and in ISKCON too. it's just like one of those things. It's a small town. Everyone knows everyone else's whatever. So that chapter, the 26th chapter, ends with a verse that's a prayer, basically, or that's wonderful. Here's the verse. Indra became angry, it summarizes the pastime, when his sacrifice was disrupted. And thus he caused rain and hail to fall on Gokul, accompanied by lightning and powerful winds, all of which brought great suffering to the cowherds, the animals, and the women there. And when Lord Krishna, who is by nature always compassionate, saw the condition of those who had him, only him as their shelter, he smiled broadly and lifted Govardhan Hill with one hand, just as a small child picks up a mushroom to play with. In this way, he protected the cowherd community. May he, Govinda, the lord of the cows and the destroyer of Indra's false pride, may he be pleased with us. So, do you remember anything from that? Raise your hand if you remember something from that. Yes. Yes. Thank you. Anyone else remember anything? Anything strike you? Yeah.
False pride.
Yes. Yes. What is the difference? That means there would be real pride. If this false pride implies there's real pride, what would be an example of real pride? Acceptable pride. Those three words are very rarely heard in this world. I don't know. Yeah. Can anyone think of an example of real pride, legitimate pride?
To understand what's the best surrender of Krishna.
Yeah, that would be a good example. And see, Krishna, I'm so proud of being a servant of Krishna, servant of Srila Prabhupada and his followers, because they're so wonderful, things like that. But yet, does anyone remember anything else? One word that struck me was compassion. Krishna's very nature, by nature he is always compassionate. And then, at the very end, may he, Govinda, the lord of the cows, and the destroyer of Indra's false pride, may he be pleased with us. So what is their desire? Whoever spoke this verse, and it's different acharyas say different persons spoke this verse, but what is their desire? Somehow or another to please Krishna. Now, in the next chapter, the 27th chapter, Indra comes with Surabhi, and apologizes to Krishna. He's understood his mistake, and he apologizes to Krishna. And here's just a few verses from his apology. My dear Lord, when my sacrifice was disrupted, I became fiercely angry because of false pride. Thus I tried to destroy your coward community with severe rain and wind. O Lord, you have shown mercy to me by shattering my false pride and defeating my attempt to punish Vrindavan. To you, the Supreme Lord, Spiritual Master, and Supreme Soul, I have now come for shelter. So he understood that he had been proud of something that was actually incorrect for him to be proud of. And what was that? He had so much power. And because he was proud, he became insulted. And because he was so insulted when they stopped the Indrajagya, he became so angry, and his anger was so extreme that he wanted, he desired, he attempted to destroy the entire community, including all the residents of Vrindavan, including all the cows. Such anger, born of being insulted because of his false pride. He was proud of something that actually wasn't his. That was the power that he has. And he was proud of considering himself the center. And on the other hand, contrasting to that, were the cowherd men who just wanted to please Krishna because of their great focus on him and their great affection for him. Now, after Indra apologized, then Krishna explains a few things to him. He speaks quite directly to him. And he says, a man blinded by intoxication with his power and opulence, because this tends to happen to a person who has a false ego, whatever opulence he has, which is really a gift, he becomes proud of. And how would we become, or why should we be proud of a gift? It's a gift. We didn't create it. So a person blinded by intoxication, illusioned by his power and opulence, cannot see me nearby with the rod of punishment in my hand. That's very dramatic, isn't it? A person who is proud, intoxicated with false pride, he does not see me nearby with the rod of punishment in my hand. If I desire his real welfare, I drag him down from his materially fortunate position. Indra, you may go now. Execute my order and remain in your appointed position as King of Heaven. Krishna didn't drag him down, rather he removed his false pride. But be sober. Contrast with the other verse. Don't be intoxicated by your power. Don't think it's resting on you. Don't think you are causing it, your position. So by my order, execute my order and remain in your appointed position as King of Heaven. But be sober without false pride. So of course, there are lessons in that. And then, after that occurred, then Surabhi came and said, we don't want anything to do with this Indra anymore, who just tried to kill everyone and kill all the cows who are my descendants. Rather, we want you to be our Indra, our controller, Govinda. And that's how Krishna received the name of Govinda, the Indra, the Lord of the cows, and the senses too, of and the land. So then Sarabi and Aravat, the elephant carrier of Indra, and Indra and all the devatas, they gave a coronatory bath. They bathed in Abhishek Krishna, who is now known as Govinda. And the place where that occurred is Govindakund on the other side. Did you visit Govindakund today, on this very day? What do you think of Govindakund? Someone? Okay, yeah. Ananjay Prabhu. What do you think of Govindakund?
Nice.
That's really great. What did you consider nice about Govindakund?
I'll be honest, though, we had sugar cane juice there.
It was what?
Sugar cane juice.
The sugar cane juice, yes. Govindakund has the best sugar cane juice. Okay, we'll leave it at that. And outside we have some Govindakund sugar cane juice for sale, by the way. And it's the best. So after, and here's one of the transition points I wanted to make. So after Krishna was crowned by all the devatas, he was crowned as the central person of the universe, which he already is, but he was acknowledged as that. Then what happened to Vrindavan, which had been inundated? And the end of the chapter says that the most eminent demigods chanted the praises of the Lord, and they scattered wonderful shower of flowers all around him. All three worlds felt supreme satisfaction. Now, please listen to this. And the cows drenched the surface of the earth with their milk. Rivers flowed with various kinds of tasty liquids. Trees exuded honey. Edible plants came to maturity without cultivation, and hills gave forth jewels that were formerly hidden in their interiors. And still more amazing, did you hear that, by the way? If I asked you if you remember something, would you be able to raise your hand and say something? Yes, Prasvihari.
Trees and honey coming out of trees.
Yes. I'm going to read it again because it's so beautiful. And then I'm going to ask you a question at the end. What point is being made? That's the question. So listen carefully. Rivers flowed with various kinds of tasty liquids. Trees exuded honey. Edible plants came to maturity without cultivation. That means that anytime you wanted to have some vegetables or something, you just go outside and just pick some plants. And hills gave forth jewels that were formerly hidden in their interiors. Now here's something even more wonderful that happened. O Parikit, Sukadeva Goswami is speaking, beloved of the Kuru dynasty, upon the ceremonial bathing of Krishna on the Abhishek, all living creatures, even those cruel by nature, became entirely free of enmity. So what point is being made? Yes, please.
When Krishna is worshipped, everyone is satisfied, or when Krishna is happy, everyone is happy. And everything flourishes.
Yeah, yes. Exactly right. Anyone else like to add something to that? Or say something else?
In one sense, Krishna does not discriminate, but
did you get that from that? Because Krishna was satisfied with him being placed in the center. Yes? Yeah, so everyone, every living entity, and the earth became opulent and provided all necessities for everyone. Anyone else like to add anything to that? Yes. Say that again?
Sorry.
Why did that particular result come?
Why specifically freed from enmity?
Yes, because enmity with others is really has its root with on enmity with Krishna. It's hard to accept, but we've actually turned our back on Krishna. Why should he be the center? Why shouldn't I be the center? So there's some enmity, unnatural, but born of freedom, of the soul's freedom, that he actually turns his back on Krishna with some enmity, and he wants to be the center. And the result of that is Krishna gives us an illusory sense of being the center. He's kind and reciprocates with us and gives us an illusory sense of being the center of the universe. And the gift is a material mind. And in this material mind, a bubble of our consciousness, we consider every conditioned soul, except for the devotees here, consider themselves the central figure of the universe. That's what it means to be a conditioned soul. And this is the gift of Maya, where we imagine ourselves the center based on the material mind. This is the gift of the Maya in reciprocation with our desire to be central or imagine ourselves central. And as I invariably point out when I make this point, that although we imagine ourselves the center, we can't convince anyone else that we're the center. Not even one person, not even a mosquito. So now we're going to move on to tomorrow's class. Could you hold me? Because this points out the central issue of every conditioned soul is being separate from Krishna, and not wanting Krishna to be central and imagining ourselves as the center. Now, tomorrow's program is an internally based program. We call it Alone with Krishna, Together with Krishna's Devotees. A balance. But in one sense, the central part, or the part that we don't usually do, is confront ourselves with Krishna. No, that's not stated properly. But confront who we are in relationship with Krishna. And what is our relationship with Krishna? Because usually in this world, I can say this for myself too, when I'm alone, to stop me of thinking deeply, introspectively, I will tend to distract myself immediately. And of course, nowadays, the immediate way people distract themselves, and you see this everywhere. As soon as when you go to the airport, you'll see 20 people lined up and sitting, and all of them are on their mobile phones and their own little universes, being somewhere other than where they are. So that's, what do they call that, the weapon of mass distraction, the mobile phone. But if it wasn't the mobile phone, it wasn't like distraction was born with the invention of the smartphone. This is what it means, practically speaking, that we're continually doing one thing after another, to distract us from the realities of life. The fact that we're getting older, the fact that there's anxieties about hundreds of things, the fact that our grandparents have passed away and our time is coming up, and distract us from the fact that my knee hurts and my ankle hurts. It's a world of distraction. And Maya is always flashing distracting things in front of us to distract us, because we want to be distracted and not face our relationship with Krishna and see how it is flourishing or is it not flourishing, because we're all here because we want to get closer to Krishna. Is our spiritual life flourishing or not? So Vyasadeva, tonight you'll be given a little booklet like this, that we'll give it to you basically properly. It says, Alone with Krishna, Together with Krishna's Devotees, a digital detox retreat filled with Krishna Katha and plenty of time alone for introspection, prayer, satsya japa, and meaningful shastric reading, plus heart-opening association with devotees, kirtan, and prasadam. So this, and we'll discuss it tomorrow, and we'll give you one tonight. Everyone will get one, and we request that you, it's not long, but you read it tonight or tomorrow morning before we begin our retreat. This tells the basics. And the reason why we're giving you this old-fashioned thing known as a booklet is because you're not going to have your mobile phones with you. So are we going to do that? We're going to collect everywhere. Okay, bring your mobile phone tomorrow, and we're going to take it from you and lock it up. Can you handle that? Okay.
Brave.
Yeah, very brave. Yeah. Wow. And then we'll also give you a second booklet. Oops. This one is readings from the Bhagavatam, but it also has some Prabhupada Lilamrita about Srila Prabhupada, and also some words from Prabhupada about japa. This you'll get tomorrow morning. But the contents of the Srimad Bhagavatam section that we've placed in there with purports, I'm going to give you a preview of right now. And it's the fifth chapter of the first canto, where Narada Muni meets Vyasadeva. Now Vyasadeva is an incarnation of the Lord, especially empowered to compile the Vedic literatures, which are the instructions basically of how to get out of the material world. And he's done so much already. He's compiled the four Vedas, he's written the Vedanta Sutra, he's written down the Mahabharata, which has all the Vedic truths in it in a story form in the history of the Bharat, the glorious land of Bharat, and ends with the Kurukshetra War and so many different dynasties. So he's done so much, incredible amounts, but yet he's not feeling satisfied. And this is the plight of every conditioned soul, and not that Vyasadeva is a conditioned soul, But this is the plight of every conditioned soul, that we do so many things and we distract ourselves and we try to achieve this and we try to achieve that, and we see someone has something that we don't want and we think, if I had that, it's going to bring me the happiness to fill the dissatisfaction in my heart. And sometimes I distract myself from even thinking about these things, and sometimes I, and this is life. The Bhagavad Gita in the 15th chapter, it describes the tree of the material world as a reflection of spiritual reality, a banyan tree, and how the living entity, the soul, each and every one of us, go from one position, one life, to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next, thinking that if I had this, then the satisfaction that eludes me will come to me. And we go through life after life after life after life, searching the material world for the missing piece in the puzzle of happiness. Now, do you believe that? This is a question that you should ask yourself. And tomorrow you'll have time to ask yourself those kind of questions. That's called introspection. Coming to grips with who you really are and what you really want. If I ask the question, how many of you want to go back to Godhead to be with Krishna? Everyone says, yeah, Haribo. And then, but how about the next question? Well, what do you really want? What do you want? What do the other parts of you push you to want? And how are you going to deal with the mixture of desires that are the complicated person I call myself? How do I deal with this? So in any case, Srila Vyasadeva is feeling dissatisfied after having achieved so much. And then his spiritual master appears. Krishna reciprocates with everyone. Really, he reciprocates with everyone. Yayatam mam prapadyante. He reciprocates with us, each and every one of us, according to what we want. But not exactly giving us everything that we want. That's up to him how he's going to deal with us, which is also based on our ultimate desires. But in any case, Narada Muni appears just when Vyasadeva is feeling this internal dissatisfaction. And he says, the first question, first point that Narada, he asks a question, but it's a probing question. Are you satisfied by identifying yourself with the body or the mind as the object of self-realization? In other words, when we look for self-satisfaction, we tend to look for it on the bodily or mental platform, as if the body or the mind were ourself. So is that the object of your self-realization? Because you've written so many books that point people towards self-realization. But are they directed to the satisfaction of the mind or the satisfaction of the body? Or are they directed to the person who is really us, that has nothing to do with the body and the mind? Do you believe that? That you're not the body? Do you believe that you're not your mind? Well, sometimes I believe I'm not my mind when I'm but sometimes I really am my mind, and sometimes I really am my body, it seems to me. well, what to do about that? Should I do anything about that? This is the kind of, I would say, questions that we can look into tomorrow when we're alone with Krishna, very private alone with Krishna time. Narada Muni continues, your inquiries were full and your studies were also well fulfilled, and there is no doubt that you have prepared a great and wonderful work, the Mahabharata, which is full of all kinds of Vedic sequences, elaborately explained. You have fully delineated the subject of impersonal Brahman, as well as the knowledge derived from that. Why then should you be despondent? You've done everything. You've, in contemporary terms, you've ticked all the boxes, and yet you're not happy. Why should you be despondent in spite of all this and thinking that you're undone, you've done something wrong, my dear Prabhu? And Vyasadeva said, all you have said about me is perfectly correct. Despite of this, I am not, despite all this, I'm not pacified, I'm not peaceful. I therefore question you about the root cause of my dissatisfaction, for you are a man of unlimited knowledge due to your being the offspring of Brahma, who was self-born without mundane father or mother. Everything is that is mysterious is known to you because, and here's a hint, because you worship the creator and destroyer of the material world and the maintainer of the spiritual world. You are a devotee of Krishna, the original personality of Godhead, who is above, who transcends the three modes of material nature. In that one sentence, or fragment sentence, fragment phrase, that he's above the modes of material nature, this is the hint of Krishna's Vrindavan Leela, which appears to be like different activities of this world, but it actually has nothing to do with the activities of this world. It appears to be a reflection of the material world, but actually the material world is a reflection of spiritual reality. Do you believe that? How deeply? Like the sun, he says to Narada Muni, your goodness can travel everywhere in the three worlds, and like air, you penetrate the internal region of everyone. As such, you are as good as the all-pervasive supersoul. You know what's really going on inside of me. Please, therefore, find out the deficiency in me. Find out my fault. And not only that, tell me what it is, because otherwise I'm going to remain in this dissatisfied position regardless, despite the fact that I've done so much and achieved so much. And not only that, find out my deficiency despite my being absorbed in transcendence. He's on the transcendental platform, and yet he's still feeling deficient. And despite the fact that I'm following all the disciplines, the rules, regulations, and vows, and still something is missing. And Narada immediately goes, you have not broadcast the sublime and spotless glories of the personality of Godhead. You've written so much, but you haven't filled your literatures with Krishna. That philosophy which does not satisfy the transcendental senses of the Lord is considered worthless. So the purpose of filling the books, the consciousness with Krishna, is for Krishna's pleasure. And in the material world, everyone is selfish, self-centered, and it doesn't bring us what we hoped it would bring us, having everything centered around me. And amazingly enough, the more frustrated we become trying to do so many things for me, we think that my problem isn't the central point, that I haven't glorified Krishna, but I've made Krishna the center, but I need to be more self-centered and do more things for me, and need to do more and more and more for me. This is the way the illusory energy works. You have, despite the fact that you have described the four principles, beginning with religious performances, the kama, artha, dharma, moksha, despite having done all that in the Vedic literatures, you have not described the glories of the personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. So it goes on like this. And then he tells him what to do. He said, because your consciousness is already so elevated and pure, you situate yourself in meditation and focus your consciousness on the absolute truth. You, in yoga, bhakti yoga, you focus your consciousness on Krishna and see how Krishna reciprocates with that. And when Vyasadeva does this in the, not the next chapter, but the next, the seventh chapter, he has a full revelation of the absolute truth. Krishna, he sees the material energy, he sees the living entities, he sees the cause of the despondency of the living entities. He sees the cure, and the cure is the Srimad Bhagavatam, which removes anartha pasamam sakshat bhakti yoga, and hopes to say, lokasya janato vidvan chakre satvita samhita. He sees that the refocusing of the consciousness of the living entity on the Supreme Lord will remove all the anarthas and all the suffering. All anartha means the desires for things that actually aren't beneficial for us. So he gives the Bhagavatam for this especially. He leads really ultimately to the pastimes of Krishna, the smiling face of Krishna in the 10th canto. So there's so much more, but tomorrow, what you'll be do, we'll explain in more detail tomorrow. But because when I first tried this with the devotees, I suggested they be alone with Krishna by Govardhan Hill, and most of the devotees said, "I don't know what to do. What am I supposed to do if I'm alone with Krishna?" So we worked out a system to give some structure to what you do, which will make it easier and also give you freedom to go as deeply into whatever you want in a very personal and individual way. Perhaps, could I have one of the folders? Is your leg okay? It's asleep, yes?
It'll be okay.
Okay. So in, this is your...
Does anyone get one of those?
Only those who want one. Yes. You can have the first
one.
You want to be first.
I think everyone should get one.
Okay, if you want it.
I want everyone to get one.
Okay, then everyone shall get one. But one thing is that they should get this tonight, and they're in there.
Yes, on the bottom.
Yeah, so in here is it's sort of an altar kit. And there's also is the wood pieces over here. So you can get these tomorrow, actually, but I'll just... There's a cloth to put on. And you'll set up an altar by Giraj. And choose your own, you'll choose your own place under a tree if you so desire, and we'll have guards around to protect you from the tigers. Forget the monkeys, it's the tigers we worry about. The tiger means our minds. But set up, we'll set it up, and then there's different things that you'll have to do, and there's some different prompts that aren't in here, I think. Correct? They're not in here, or they are? And some little altar kits.
The prompts are not in there yet.
Yes, the prompts are not in there, and a candle and things like that. So it'll be quite, it's quite an event, an internal event, but it'll be as internal as you want it to be, according to who you are and what you so desire.
So they set up an altar?
And then tomorrow we'll tell them more things that they'll do. Everyone will do. But you'll have, so there's basically, this book explains it also the booklet that you read tonight. And then we'll go over it again tomorrow. But here's the basic idea. Might as well get into it right now. So things that you should... Yeah, but why don't we give them out after?
Okay.
So that, because they'll read it after.
Yeah.
We don't agree on everything sometimes. But if they're reading, see, because I've done this so many times with other books, they won't listen to what I'm saying, and then I might as well just leave. Yeah. So you'll get it after. So don't worry. So you don't have to take notes or anything. This retreat. 55 years married to the same person. And then I heard that Mohan, without my knowledge, blessed us yesterday that we're going to be, what did he say?
Mohan's blessing at the
life after
the it.
This retreat has a goal. In this age of busyness, is the goal, to create a nourishing spiritual break, a digital detox, and a personal spiritual journey, adventure of introspection, prayer, shastric reading, japa, and the association of devotees. Of course, that you've already doing many of these things. And then to return from this journey with valuable gifts useful in our day-to-day lives. This retreat has been organized around facilitating that goal. We've established three simple, hard boundary rules for the retreat. First rule, digital detox. Please, no use of mobile phones, tablets, smartwatches. Okay, you can have your watch. You need to know what time it is. Or computers during the retreat. If an exception is unavoidable, please consult one of the retreat's facilitators. Digital detox time can be holy, healing, and helpful. Here's a really difficult one. Punctuality.
Oh, no.
Be on time or early for all programs. Our time together is both rare and short. Punctuality will help us make the best use of our time together. 3. Monavrata, observe silence. Please keep silent during the Monavrata times. Doing so helps us keep an internal focus.
Does that mean when you're walking out of here and you're going towards the hill, you shouldn't be chattering about different things and so on?
We're actually going to start that section by the hill promptly at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. So you can chatter on your way to the hill. But once you get, well, try to become deep. How does Mohan say it? Deep, deep, deep. What does he mean? He means that we should try to be internal and prayerful. So there's different things in the book, but you'll see them all. So, and then there are four essential. Monavrata, I think, was the third one. What was the first one?
Detox.
What was the second one? Anyone remember the first one?
Detox.
Second one?
Punctuality.
Back in school again. Punctuality. And then Monavrata. And try to take advantage of the time. And four essential internal moods. Essential. Be honest with your honesty with yourself. Because what happens is private, and then we'll discuss in our groups, but only as much as you want to. But when you're dealing with Krishna, be honest. A determination to try your best to keep the Maha Mantra with you during the entire Alone with Krishna, together with Krishna's devotees retreat. So keep chanting, keep the mantra going. This is the essence of all advice. Third, an open-hearted desire to step forward spiritually, to deepen your inner journey to Krishna. And four, a desire to spend your time wisely during the retreat. But of course, these are the themes for the big retreat, but this is a retreat within the retreat, so to speak. Okay, are there any questions? And if there will be answered by you reading this, I'll let you know. Or tomorrow we'll speak again about what we're going to do. But are there any questions to this point? Are you ready? Yes.
This is a question about what you were saying earlier.
Thank you.
Mind and our intelligence.
Yeah.
So we're still not those things.
Yes.
But everything I experience spiritually is through those.
Yes.
First. So I was wondering how do we disassociate this?
We try to use them in Krishna's service. That's the goal. I was listening to such an interesting lecture, talk that Prabhupada gave in 1966, probably at 22nd Avenue in the summer, just this morning. I listened to it yesterday, and it intrigued me so much because it was answering a question that I was really had been thinking about, which is basically the essence of what you just asked, is here we are in the material world with material bodies, with material minds, with material intelligence. How do we keep and enlarge our spiritual focus? How do we keep, the answer was, in one sense, you have to keep your internal desire strengthened continuously, your internal desire, by hearing, by sincere prayer, by good japa, good sadhana, and then use everything in Krishna service with detachment from the results. That was in essence. And I mentioned this perhaps the first time we met together, is that we want to really heal the spiritual divide within us, or the divide within us that this is the spiritual part of my life, and the theoretical, and here's the rest of my life, and here's the material world. This part's for Krishna, this part's for me. So we want to heal that divide in a practical way, and Prabhupada was speaking very practically on how to do this, how to see everything and use everything that isn't us, but seems like us, and it's to some degree at our command, how to use that for Krishna's pleasure. And therein is what bhakti is. Using things, everything that Krishna's given us for Krishna's pleasure. There's a lot on this particular topic also in this section of the Bhagavatam that you'll get. And you could read it in a careful way if you so desire. But this is obviously a large topic. And how do you do it mechanically when you don't really love Krishna yet? I don't mean you, but I mean, how does one do it because it's because you know it's what you're supposed to do? And you have to do that. But the desire to actually please Krishna, to be with Krishna, to know Krishna, to be attracted to Krishna, that should increase in life. And the internal motivation. But until we have a strong internal motivation, we need the structure of the external motivation. We do it because we're supposed to do it. But that should give birth to an internal desire. Is that sort of clear? Any other deep and meaningful questions? I asked for deep and meaningful questions, and I got one. Well, it's almost two parts of it. Where is Krishna's compassion to him, to Indra? And that compassion comes very much because he lets us make mistakes. And the universe is so composed to always be instructing us, in fact. Plus, we have Krishna inside, a little honest voice, depending upon how pure and connected we are, to advise us and tell us, you know why this is happening. You shouldn't do this, you should do this. And we have Shastra and Sadhus like that. But Krishna, like he did with Indra, he allows Indra to come to his own conclusion too, because he's the masterful teacher. So when you realize something, it's very different from when someone tells you. So that's a partial answer to how is Krishna's compassion exhibited in his dealings with Indra. And then Indra made another mistake too after this. He got angry at Indra, at Krishna for, Krishna wanted the Parijata tree after giving back the earrings of Aditi. And then Indra still wouldn't let him have it, because there's such a warning in that the intoxication of power and wealth is so strong that unless one's self-concept is a servant, it will intoxicate you. And from that intoxication is the false pride, and from the false pride is the insult, and from the insult is the anger, and from the anger is the revenge, etc. And if it's not exhibited externally, inside we want to. So then, what was the second part about how do we ourselves?
We may have some guilt in our own spiritual lives of not living up to certain standards.
Yeah, yeah. How to deal with that?
So how can we kind of understand Krishna's compassion
in relationship to the feeling of guilt?
How
to transform that guilt into humility is the question. And humility doesn't mean continuously thinking about how bad you are and all the mistakes you've made and you're not good enough. That's not what humility is. My term for that is self-indulgent neurotic behavior. When you're just thinking about yourself all the time. But humility is something different. Humility means maybe you touch your insufficiency with your consciousness, but then taking shelter of Krishna, that's humility. So when, and therefore humility is a prerequisite for Trinadapisi Kirtaniya Sarad, because a truly humble devotee will always chant, because he knows that Maya is very strong and he is very tiny and insignificant, and Krishna is his shelter and is all powerful. So of course these are topics that are big, in how to and how to actually realize these things and apply it to our lives is no easy matter. But we should be, yeah, we need good friends and good association to have some patience. And what's going on out there? Sounds like someone got socked. Either that or they're serving prasadam, one of the two. They're a wild bunch, those Casey sock people. That's such a funny name, Casey Sock. But the funny thing about it is, once you hear it, you can't stop thinking about the name. It's so peculiar. So it really works from a marketing point of view in that sense, in my opinion. Maybe you should change from TSI to Casey Shoes or something.
It's been done already.
I'm afraid to ask if anyone has any other deep and probing questions, because
my question was that we're always told and we read that Krishna is our best friend, and yet also we're always told to pray for everything. Like always, you know, the answer tends to be, oh, pray to Krishna, he will reveal it. So how do you balance that? Because usually it feels very selfish to always go to your friend and always, whenever you approach him, you're just asking for something. Can you give me this? Can I give him this? Can I give him this? So how do you balance this kind of, some kind of guilt, like, oh, sometimes I just don't want to ask Krishna something because as a friend, I wouldn't treat him like that.
How would you treat your friend?
I would try to mix the asking with serving. Like do both, not just take away.
Because any relationship that must be giving and taking. Yeah, so it sounds like you should increase the serving part, it sounds to me. But also the residents of Vrindavan, their love is so strong that they don't ask Krishna for anything. And even when it appears they're asking for something for them, they're not. It's all, they just want to be close to him. But that's on the highest level, and we're not on that highest level. So, and also to balance everything, there's so many structures in our devotional lives that we perform. I just was reading yesterday about how the chanting of the Gayatri mantras, the Diksha mantras, their worship of Krishna. So it's rare that I will think this is a way to worship Krishna. It puts the chanting of the mantra in a completely different light. And it puts the chanting of japa in a completely different light. Of here is a service I can perform for Krishna's pleasure. And it puts off reading. This is bhakti, devotional service, shravanam, kirtanam, vishnam. It puts chanting in a different light. Here is an offering to Krishna. Here's offering a stick of incense. How can I do that with some consciousness, with some intention for Krishna's pleasure? So take these questions with you tomorrow, and if they're really, yeah, you pray to Krishna for that, but you don't only do that, but you also want to serve and glorify him. And it also describes in Srila, I think it's either Jiva Goswami or Vishnu, talk about Thakur's commentary on Nectar Devotion, Bhaktivedanta Samrita Sindhu, that when you're describing pure devotional service, that if you're in an emergency situation, like, you know, a big boulder is falling on your head and a tiger is attacking from the side and you pray to Krishna for help, that's not against pure devotional service at all. When you're in a difficult type of situation, it's just natural. So to turn to Krishna is natural for a living entity. It's natural. And to turn away from Krishna, well, I'd love to give this example. Like, to turn to you is one thing, but how does it feel when I do this? I mean, not what you think about it, but how does it feel? And see if you want to talk to me, and I just go like this. And how does it feel, not what do you think about it?
Unwelcome.
Yeah, so if we turn away from Krishna, well, he thinks, well, if he's going to be like that, you know. I mean, not that he literally thinks like that, because it's, but if we try to turn to Krishna, if we sincerely take out a step that's in our capacity to turn to Krishna, Krishna appreciates that so much. And he sees my devotee is turning to me. That's the Ajamil pastime, where Krishna, where Ajamil is calling out his son's name, Narayana, and Lord Narayana in the spiritual world takes that, oh, my devotee is calling for me. He's seeing from a very wonderful perspective. So the more we hear about Krishna from Shastra, the more we learn of his qualities and we learn to trust them and learn to trust him. And then, because how could we actually take shelter of him if we don't trust? It's the essence of relationship is trust. Trust the person's gonna enter into an honest. So all these things you bring to Giriraj tomorrow this is time alone to actually confront, it's not the right word, but confront your relationship with Krishna, see what's really there and what's not there and how you want to deal with that.
Does that mean that you kind of tell him all the negative things that you're feeling, or not feeling anything, or you don't know what you're feeling? Do you tell him that?
Well, you can. If it's sincere and honest, but not that you just, here's my complaint list. I mean, you won't have many relationships if you do that to the people that you want to have relationships with. You're always complaining all the time. But we have a structure that will help guide you into it tomorrow.
That would fall under being honest, though, wouldn't it? To sort of acknowledge the gap.
But there has to be more than in a relationship than, Prabhu, I want to be honest with you, I hate you, and everything you do makes me sick. I mean, you have to, it doesn't work. And it could be honest, but.
Okay.
Get it? 55 years.
I went by like a moment.
But yeah, but this part of, you have to express your appreciation too, or if you have no relationship, you say, I feel sometimes I have no relationship. What do I do? Please help me, I know you're there. You know, it's real. So we want to be real. And different people are certainly going to approach in different ways according to who they